All right, ladies and gentlemen. Woo, that's very loud. Thank you all for coming out on a rainy, but at least not cold night. Not cold yet. I'm Kendra Hamilton. I think most of you guys know me. I serve on City Council, and I'm very pleased and proud to be here on this very distinguished panel of people who are very well known to me and probably to most of you, too. Beside me, we have Meredith Richards, who was a stalwart on City Council and one of the most caring and dedicated public servants that we've had here in the city of Charlottesville. And I get a kiss. And next to her, our recently retired delegate, Mitch Vanieres, who's, well, almost retired delegate Mitch Vanieres, whom we're going to miss tremendously. And we're so happy to have him here with us today. And at the end, Joe Zakos, who is the head of the Virginia Organizing Project, which, as many of you all probably know, is the leading anti-racism multiracial coalition in the state. And we're very pleased and proud to have him here with us today also. The way we're going to run this is I'm going to give everyone 10 minutes to make an opening statement. And then we're going to open it up to questions. I have come up with a question or two myself. There are some very efficient and eager young people in the back of the room who have index cards for those of you who want to pass questions forward to the panel as they're speaking. So just raise your hand as the spirit moves you, and they'll be walking back and forth. So I would like to, with no further ado, turn things over to Madam Meredith.
Thank you. Yes, we're here today to talk about Walmart and its impacts on our local economy and our local citizens and about it as a national problem as well. I'd like to begin with at the beginning with Sam Walton, who began his enterprise in 1945 with what has now become the world's wealthiest corporation. But he began with a single five and dime store in 1945, and of course it morphed into the first Walmart discount store in 1962. His philosophy then, which he attributes to his barber, was buy it low, stack it high, and sell it cheap. And he parlayed this philosophy into a supply chain management process that outsmarted and outpriced all of its competitors. And it enabled Walmart to become, to pocket $10.3 billion in profits on sales of $285 billion just last year. The story of the origin of the name Walmart also testifies to Sam Walton and some of the efficiencies that he has become famous for. The name required only 7 letters as compared to the 11 letters of Ben Franklin, which was his previous franchise. And he realized that this was going to cost less in neon letters as he expanded the number of his stores. And so always in search of cost-cutting efficiencies, he opted for a 7-letter name, and presumably, as the story goes, it became Walmart. So he did succeed beyond his wildest expectations in building the store into his single store into what are now 3,800 Walmart stores in the United States and 1,600 in countries from Mexico to China. And the company plans to open another 1,000 new supercenters in the next 5 years. Each one of those supercenters will take 84% of its business from existing stores in the area where it locates. When Sam Walton wrote about his business philosophy in his book, Made in America, he outlined his 10 rules for success. Rule number 2, just behind commit to your business, was, quote, share your profits with all your associates. Treat them as partners. In turn, they will treat you as a partner, and together you will all perform beyond your wildest expectations. Clearly, Sam Walton had high expectations for his company to share the wealth with his employees. But today's Walmart has transformed into a mega corporation that creates wealth on the backs of its 1.7 million employees worldwide by paying poverty wages and withholding or overcharging for health benefits and sending its employees with company assistance and company guidance to social service agencies to apply for public assistance and Medicaid. Today, Sam Walton's high expectations have become Walmart's low road, a race to the bottom for everything from employee wages and publicly subsidized health benefits to boarded up downtowns and suppliers that are driven to move good-paying American jobs overseas to keep up with the pressure to lower their cost. The man who titled his best-selling autobiography, Made in America, and touted a corporate program called Bring It Home to the USA, spawned a modern supply chain that pulled in $18 billion worth of goods from 5,000 Chinese suppliers in 2004 and has become China's eighth largest trading partner, accounting for 10% of our annual trade deficit with China. Now over 70% of the products of the man who prided himself on Made in America products, over 70% of the products on aisles in Walmart stores now come from China. So today I feel like saying, attention shoppers, what you are buying today and the prices you are paying come at a very high cost to society. And I'm going to let the other speakers give you more information and more facts about wages, the lack of health care benefits, and some of the other issues' impact on our local economy. I expect other people will want to talk about that, and I didn't want to do it all. So.
Thank you, Meredith.
Whoa.
I wanted to just bring to you the atmosphere, the environment in the state, from the state standpoint, state legislators, state laws. We are a right-to-work state, and you know what that means. The union, if you have a union, you don't have to join the union. But we are also a state where employees have no rights. The employer can fire anybody at any time for any reason, no questions asked. So you see how much strength employees have in this state? None. And that is one of the things we're up against in dealing with Walmart. They have all the cards. They're holding all the cards. I had the experience that I think it was the 04 session. A funny thing happened on the way to the session or during the session. We passed a bill. We're trying to clean up some of the laws in the state. And what we did in doing something about the labor laws, we mistakenly took away the blue laws. We didn't mean to, but we did. And the blue laws meant that the workers had a right for a day off for religious purposes. And in the process of cleaning up a piece of legislation, we eliminated that. So as a consequence then, employees had a right to take a day off for religious purposes, Saturday and Sunday. Well, that caused a real dilemma. And here's the way one of the press releases. We had to unravel that legislation. We mistakenly granted the state's private employees the right to time off on weekends. Now, this was a disaster, as you can see. Longtime political observers said they do not recall a special session. We had to call a special session in order to straighten this mess out. And I'll show you why it was a mess. They do not recall ever being called in Virginia to correct a legislative goof. Such mistakes are usually corrected in the next regularly scheduled session. We do this. I mean, we do make mistakes. We do put bills in that have anticipated consequences, and we take care of them the next go-around. But this one drew an awful lot of fire. But making sure there is a stable and predictable environment for business and employees is very important. So the business community put pressure on the governor to call a special session in order to straighten out this mess. And the governor was not too enthusiastic about it. He kind of resisted. He said, well, let's do it the next session. But the Chamber of Commerce and all the people put a tremendous amount of pressure on him. And they actually said that this law could threaten the state's economy. We're going to go to hell in a handbasket if we don't do something about this. So as a consequence, we had a special session. This session cost us $25,000, $26,000. That's peanuts nowadays. But the thing is that even Jerry Falwell, Jerry Falwell said, one of Virginia's most well-known religious leaders, said this week that the legislative mistake must be fixed because it makes operating businesses, quote, totally impractical in modern times. Now, here's a religious leader telling us that our mistake for allowing employees to have a day off on weekends for religious purposes was a mistake. So we had a special session, and we passed, we put the law back into the books. Now, as a consequence of that, you have a whole, the way it reads is you have a lot of exceptions that the businesses can do. I don't know, have all the exceptions. But anyway, I got the feeling that this is something wrong. This is the liberal in me coming out then. Why should the business community have the control of this situation? Why is that necessary? Don't the employees have some rights? Obviously, they don't. So we passed that bill, 97-2. And I am proud to be one of the two. And I made a speech on the floor, and I brought up the question of why shouldn't employees have the right to deal with their employers as to the day off, religious day off. Why not? And I talked to the head of the labor unions. I said, what do you guys do about it, Danny? I mean, do you have any? He said, it's no problem. We work it out in our contract. They have it in their contract with the unions. The unions have it. But any other employee in the state does not have that right. The employer is the one that dictates to the individual when you're going to work. If they decide that you're going to work on Sunday, you're going to work on Sunday. And if you say, I don't want to work on Sunday, you're fired. It's as simple as that. No questions asked. You be gone. So you see who is dictating the employment picture in Virginia. We're one of the worst states for that. I just wanted to mention a couple things in closing about what's going on in the country right now as far as pay goes. Here we're talking about the economy. We're bragging about our economy today. It's doing wonderfully well. At least the stock market is. However, for all its strength, the current economic expansion is not boosting the American worker's paycheck. It's two different worlds, skilled and unskilled, says John Sylvia, chief economist at Wachovia in Charlotte. There's no way you can consider this one overall labor market. No way it's one. Well-trained job seekers are in hot demand, he says. But the labor market is weak for those whose education ended in high school. And in some cases, weak is an understatement. You have inflation now, which has reached about 5%. The upshot is that hourly earnings are effectively 2.3% below last year's level. So employees in the country, this is speaking of the country, not just Virginia, are losing they're losing on a yearly basis. I'll close with one of the an example of how community-minded Walmart is. In Virginia, Walmart contributes to the community 1.7% of their earnings. Now, we are told by our churches and all to tithe, and we use 10% as a basis. And here have a company that is in they're close to a $1 trillion business now. They give 1.7%. Is that fair? I don't think so. So I look forward to some of your questions. Joe?
Is there anybody here that works for Walmart? Sorry?
Yeah.
A couple of years ago, I was in Wytheville, Virginia, where the Virginia Organizing Project, the Wythe County Chamber of Commerce, and the Federal Reserve Bank of Richmond were having a conference. And it all started with quite a few of our members who were asking, how are we going to make our rural economy survive? And they were really worried about it. They start looking into wages and benefits and were just really concerned. And so part of the program, they brought in a speaker from Iowa who was an expert on Walmart. And he told the story like this. Now remember, the Wythe County Chamber of Commerce people were sitting in the room, and a lot of these folks are small businesses. And he said to them, when Walmart comes to town, there are winners and there are losers. And these folks were staring at a Walmart being built down the road, and it was a matter of months. And he said, if you own a grocery store, a pharmacy, or you own a hardware store, just shut the doors tonight and get out of town because you don't have a prayer of a chance of competing. You're the losers. He said, now, if you own a gas station, a restaurant, or some specialty shop like an antique store, you're the winners. He said, but I have to tell you, you may not be a winner for very long, because as Meredith pointed out, once they build stores, they operate them for a while, they ruin the local economy, and then they shut them down and build a superstore some miles away, which means that even if you're the winner in the short term, you could very well be on the losers list in the long term. Walmart has an incredibly devastating effect on local economies. Radio station in Abingdon, which is a matter of miles, it's just about 20 miles down the interstate. The owner there said that they were going to have a lot of trouble when that Walmart came in, because if you lose the local businesses, they're the ones who advertise through the local radio station. Walmart sends you flyers in the mail. They don't need that local radio station. So the impact goes quite a far away from just the workers within that building at Walmart. At the Virginia Organizing Project, we really believe that nobody working full-time should live in poverty. Well, we have to change that a little bit, because what we learn from Walmart is that they have figured out that the way to really avoid a lot of benefits is to make sure that no full-time person works more than 28 hours. And so now they consider a full-time employee at 28 hours, and if they only schedule that much, then they go under the radar screen for retirement benefits, health benefits, and lots more. If you work for Walmart, you have to work 6 months full-time before they'll put you on the health insurance plan. If you work part-time, you have to work for 2 years until you can even be considered to be on their plan. And we're talking about a system where Walmart pays a very small percentage of the overall premiums every month. Our good neighbors at Walmart aren't really good on you women folk. In fact, last year they had the largest class action lawsuit in history when 1.6 million current and former female employees sued Walmart for gender discrimination. Women comprise 92% of Walmart cashiers, but there are only 14% of the store managers are women. If we look at race, we can see Walmart doing it again. And this just happened a couple months ago. Walmart's facing allegations of discrimination in its hiring of truck drivers. Nationally, 15% of truck drivers are African American. 15%. Yet at Walmart, African Americans comprise only 2 or 3% of its fleet, which employs 7,800 truck drivers. Walmart's big, Walmart's bad. But I also think tonight we need to think of other employers who also mistreat their workers. And one bigger employer in the area that comes to mind is the University of Virginia. It's real easy to make excuses. As Delegate Vanieri says, the state law is not really on the side of workers. Well, that doesn't mean an employer can't say we're going to go over and above what the state law says we can do and we can't do. There's no law that says you can't pay your workers more. Nothing's preventing that. Yet, for Mr. Casteen and Mr. Sandridge at the University of Virginia, they're on the same list as the Waltons in really committing the immoral act of paying obscene wages to their workers. And the other part of this that we have to understand is that Walmart and other employers who pay subpar wages, whether you're dealing with retail, landscape, food services, housekeepers at the hotel, if they're paying subpar wages, each one of us is propping those folks up through our tax dollars, subsidized housing, food stamps, and lots of other social services. So it's not like we're on the sidelines and there's no impact to all of us. If you think about this for a second, you start looking at the concentration of low-wage workers. And let's just think about Walmart in Charlottesville. At a certain point, if those workers can't afford to live close to work, and they're not really making that much, if the price of gasoline keeps going up, the commute from Buckingham or Green or Fluvanna or Louisa, it's just economically out of the question. So in some ways, we have to start thinking about the low wages that really force workers out. And if there's not affordable housing on top of that, it forces them out further, and it just becomes impractical for them to do work. So it's in all of our interest. It's not just a charitable act to say these workers should be paid more. It's in all of our interest to make that work. So we could go on and on and on about how awful Walmart is, but I do have some good news tonight. Walmart is actually doing a few good things. Walmart recently announced that energy efficiency and renewable energy are part of its corporate goals for its United States stores. They're going to put solar panels on the roofs of their stores. In addition, they want to outfit their trucks with plastic skirts to cut wind resistance. These things are good for the environment. Now, Walmart's doing them to save money, and my hope is that Walmart will take that money and pay their employees a higher wage. Thank you.
We have one question from the audience. Don't be shy. And I have some questions that I've done, but I'll just go ahead and start with the questions that we've got from the audience. The first question is, isn't this, and this may not be one that the panelists themselves can answer, but, you know, you may want to take it on. Isn't this Walmart Watch campaign an attempt to unionize the Walmart workforce or an attempt to institute a living wage at Walmart?
I see.
So he's asking about Walmart Watch generally, which, of course, we can't really speak to. But, you know, maybe you can talk about it. Do you think those would be good ideas?
Well, I would like to say that although I don't know that this is part of an organized unionizing campaign, that Walmart has been very hostile to unions, and on the occasions when Walmart stores employees of a particular store have voted to form a union, the store has closed rather than allow their employees to do that, and there have been instances of that happening. This goes to a larger question of wages that Mitch and Joe were addressing. We do have a situation where there are 1.7 million employees of Walmart in the United States. Walmart is the single largest employer of all corporations in the United States. When Walmart pays their employees less than a wage that allows them to be self-sufficient and to feed and clothe and house their families without public assistance, then we have a situation where all standards are being pulled down. This is, as we call it, a race to the bottom. This is a situation where millions of people in the United States are being paid less than a wage that allows them to exist and to raise their families without public assistance. The taxpayers are indeed currently subsidizing Walmart wages. We have not talked about health benefits. None of us have talked about health benefits, so let me get to that. Walmart provides health benefits for fewer than half of its employees across the country. Many of those that do not have Walmart health insurance end up on the public Medicaid rolls. Their wages are low enough so that they qualify for public assistance. They go to their social services departments. They sign up for Medicaid. 16 states have now done a survey, conducted a survey, and published a survey where they looked at the employers for the people receiving Medicaid assistance and the children's medical health assistance. In Virginia, it's called FAMIS. The FAMIS program for children, public health insurance for children under the age of 18, that's available to low-income families. Of those 16 states, Walmart was far and away the largest employer of people who were drawing down Medicaid health benefits. So this means that we are all subsidizing through our taxes the low wages that are paid by Walmart. And in fact, the state of Maryland made an attempt last year to create some more responsibility and accountability for its large employers who were not providing health benefits by passing overwhelmingly in the General Assembly a piece of legislation called the Fair Share Health Care Act. Ultimately, unfortunately, it was vetoed by Governor Ehrlich. But what it provided for was it created a fund that employers, and it mandated that employers of more than 10,000 employees who were putting less than 8% of the wages paid, of their payroll, into the health benefits of their employers had to pay the differential of what they were not putting in, under 8%, into a state health fund, and the fund is used by the state to help pay for Medicaid benefits. And it's a way of evening the playing field for those employers who aren't providing health benefits and those who are good corporate employers and do provide them. And ultimately, as I say, it was vetoed. So it has not had a chance to play itself out and see how it works for the state. But it was kind of a model way of responding to some of the inequities that employers, larger employers, and it would not have to be, if we did something like that in Virginia, we could set our own standards. It would not have to be the same exact numbers, 10,000 employees and 8%. It could be tailor-made for what the averages are in Virginia. But Mitch, would you like to address the issue of the question that was asked?
Well, just to add a little bit to what you said, that there's a recent memo that has been passed or somehow found by other than Walmart administration, where the administration of Walmart is advocating, told their managers, whoever, when they're hiring people, to make sure they hire younger people, because that has an effect on the health insurance. You don't want old people like me on your payroll because I cost money. I need a doctor more often. I need more health care. Young people don't need as much. So therefore, do all you can, manager, to make sure you get young people on the payroll. And they're so big, they dictate their insurance policies as to what the specifications will be. And if they have a lot of young employees, it's going to affect their premiums, definitely. And that's what they're advocating. Joe, you got any comments?
Sure. Well, I wanted to underscore what Mitch said earlier, too, about the atmosphere in the state is, you know, it's not really a question about are we here promoting unions or not, because workers have no rights. They have none at all. What I think I'm here for tonight is to raise this question to all of you. Average wage for regular full-time hourly associates for Walmart in Virginia is $9.49 an hour. And we already mentioned that health care is often missing there, too, or are not very adequate. So $9.49 an hour is the average. Now, as one Virginia Tech administrator said concerning their living wage campaign, no thinking human being really believes that that's fair when you're only making $9-something an hour. Now, let's think about this for a second. People who are working every day, they're going to work at Walmart. They have to work a whole year, some of them 2 years, some of them 10 years, and 15 and 20 years to make what one Walmart executive makes in one day. That's wrong.
I'd just like to add, last night when I went to the movie, I was coming out, and a gentleman stopped me. He was a Walmart employee. He said, I've been working for 13 years for Walmart. I'm an hourly employee. Well, this raises two questions. Joe just raised another question. The average is $9 or something an hour. Well, this guy, obviously, after 13 years, is earning way above $9. Also, after 13 years, he's still an hourly employee. By that time, he should be salaried, I would think. If he's any value to the company, they would want to salary him. And, of course, they have the benefit of having a salaried employee. Then they can work as many hours they want. But that's beside the point. The thing is, after 13 years, I would think he's a valued employee of the company and ought to be on some kind of salary. He also mentioned that this movie was all a bunch of lies and that it was a Michael Moore type of movie, documentary, that a lot of the information was out of date. Again, I didn't have the presence of mind. I didn't want to start an argument. Anyway, it's a big crowd around. But I guess the question would be, how'd you get your information to dispute what the movie said? So obviously, I would say Walmart has told him what the facts are.
Here's a question that's interesting. Does not Walmart personify capitalistic competition? Isn't the reason GM and Ford in trouble now to a great degree because of rising health care costs? So,
well, I think health care costs are an issue throughout the country. There's no question about that. And ultimately, we're going to have to address it on a national scale. But there is an inequity when good corporate citizens of the community pay health benefits, and if they have to, they pass the cost on to the customers because that is the capitalistic system. Your costs are passed on in the prices of your products. And the cutthroat competition that Walmart specializes in is in part accomplished through not providing health care benefits for its employees. When Walmart first began to offer lower prices, it did so through a kind of supply chain management process that was very unique and innovative. And it is primarily what has allowed Walmart, or in the early days of the corporation, to be competitive with its prices to the extent that it was, and that allowed it to rise to the prominence that it is today. And that eliminated the distributors. I mean, Walton's innovation was to eliminate the middleman. He eliminated the distributors. He dealt directly with manufacturers. He did built his own distribution system, which was highly automated and computerized, and allowed the company to keep direct minute-by-minute records of everything that was selling off the shelves so they could immediately order new products. Thomas Friedman describes their supply chain process that allowed them to build the corporate image and the prices and the prominence that they have as a corporation. He describes that in the book, The Earth is Flat, and or something like that. What is the title? The World is Flat. Okay, it's close. And this is certainly fair competition. You know, this is innovation. This is competitive pricing based on building a better system and building efficiency into the system. Where Walmart, I think, has gone wrong and has started taking the low road is in building the profits beyond that competitive stage by the low wages and the lack of health benefits that it pays. And no, I don't see this as fair competition in a capitalist economy. When your workers can't earn enough to make a living and the gap between the rich and the poor becomes greater and greater, and work and poverty go hand in hand as it does in today's economy in the United States, then I don't see that as simply capitalistic competitive system. That's wrong.
I guess you could say the capitalistic competitive system is what is doing GM in. While GM, Ford, and Chrysler, of course, they've been bought by foreign companies, but while we were on top of the pile as far as building automobiles and selling automobiles in Detroit, the manufacturers could give anything to the workers that were demanded by the unions and still make a profit, big profit. And I would say you have to look at management at fault there because they were not visionary. They were just looking at the present day question of making a profit and not looking to the future. That's what the foreign builders of automobiles do. They have looked to the future. They have built on the future. And now we have a real problem in this country with our automobile manufacturers, plus building the wrong kind of automobiles to start off with, building these huge SUVs, and the Japanese come in here with hybrids. And we hadn't even thought about hybrids until this year, I think, is about it, with the American builders. And the Japanese are just going right on with that. And they're just eating our lunch. And I say that's poor management of the past, catching up with us. Unfortunately, who pays the piper then? The employees, the retirees, hopefully the stockholders will have to pay some of this as well. But that is, I think, you have to look at management. If you have a capitalistic, competitive system, management has an awful lot of control over what happens.
I'm just going to add one other thing. I mean, if you look at the cover of the book that you got, corporations want us to think that these are free markets and competition. But, I mean, just look at how much we, through our tax dollars, subsidize Walmart. I mean, the numbers are pretty outrageous when you think about how much Medicaid money is going to people who actually, for health care, for people who are working at Walmart. And I think there are a lot of myths out there. And we hear lots and lots of stories of the welfare queen ripping off the public assistance system. But it seems to be okay that Walmart does this. And, well, that's just business. And I think that's one of the things that all of us need to, especially with our congressional delegation, just say enough is enough. I mean, why don't we start telling people the truth about how much these companies are getting through various subsidy programs?
A couple of questions. Well, if you guys would like to sort of respond to the issue, but let me just read these questions.
We have a Walmart distribution center that's coming to Zion's Crossroads very soon.
What can be done about the tax breaks Walmart gets from the cities, counties? And here's another question related. How do these negative consequences escape notice in the planning process? Why do local officials
officials, they're the ones that have to make those decisions. They can make the decisions. And it's up to you. It's up to us, the public, to put pressure on our local politicians, local governments, to resist this going on. It happened up in Front Royal, in one of our just local, and I'm sure it happened a lot of other places, but Front Royal, they kicked out a city council, or I think it was city council or board of supervisors, because they had voted for a Walmart to go into a certain place in rezoning. So there is power. There is power in the people in dealing with the local governments. But local governments fall under the, I don't know what it is, the atmosphere that Walmart presents to them. You're going to get big tax dollars because we're coming in here. And, of course, you have to point out, you have to start and think, you're going to get big tax dollars from Walmart, but you're not going to get tax dollars from the little merchants that are going out of business. And that's probably more in the long run. And all the money that goes to Walmart goes out of the state. It leaves town, whereas our local entrepreneurs, our local shopkeepers, all that money stays in town, stays here, and it's recycled into our economy. So it's up to us, the public, to put pressure on our politicians to resist when that question is raised.
I was summoned into a mayor's office in another part of the state, and he said, could you please do a living wage 101 for me right now? I'm not quite sure what that's like. And I said, well, Mr. Mayor, what are you trying to do? And he said, I'm trying to make sure that our local economy survives. He says, I know things are going to change. And I mean, he said, if I look to the east, I see textile plants and furniture factories closing. If I look to the west, I see coal employment declining, although coal production continues to go up, but employment's going down. He said, I see that there's not as many jobs in agriculture. I see a lot of people fleeing from the rural areas to move to the suburbs and urban areas. He said, I'm kind of scared, and so I'm just looking for some ideas. And I said, well, you know, what do you think politicians get credit for? He said, well, we get credit for, like, big plants and hundreds of jobs, and that's what we're looking for. I said, well, has that been helpful to you? He said, no. And he proceeded to tell me a story of he said he's had to drive about an hour and a half to the airport to pick up somebody who's coming in, and they're the front line, right? This wasn't a Walmart, but it was another company wanted to come and come in big time. He said they got off the plane, shook hands, and said, Mr. Mayor, what can you give us? And he said, because that's their game. And they know they can say, Mr. Mayor, what are you going to give us? And they're going to go to the highest bidder. And he said, in the political game as a mayor is to be able to land, catch the big fish. And I said, well, what if we reframe this for a second? What would keep your local economy alive? Do you think that having more carpenters and more electricians and more plumbers and more people to work in the assisted living facilities that you're developing, and think about some of those things that have a more organic growth to them. So what if we would take all these millions of dollars that we're subsidizing for industrial parks and big developments and say to a local plumber who has one or two helpers, here's what we're going to do. We're going to give you enough money to carry your cash flow for 4 to 6 months and to help you buy another truck and to help you buy enough tools so that you can hire and train 3 more people. And hopefully within a couple years, those folks will know enough that it'll be a crew on its own, and then maybe your cash flow will allow you to hire a couple more people. Because plumbers, you need plumbers. And if they're local and they're going to stay here, because he was also worried that all the young people were leaving, and I said, well, why won't you do this? because it seems to make sense, and you could have more shops. And, you know, as our discussion with these people is, hey, Mr. Plumber, we're going to help you expand your business as long as you pay living wage jobs, but we want to have maybe one seminar a year where we can tell your employees, buy locally, continue to feed your local economy. It's not really that complicated. So after we were all done, I said, does this make sense to you? He said, absolutely, but it'll never fly because I still have to be able to say I landed the big fish.
Well, Kendra mentioned the Zion Crossroads Walmart Distribution Center that's coming to Fluvanna County. That is a classic example of public subsidy for Walmart to locate in the area. The Zion Crossroads Park was developed jointly by the City of Charlottesville, Albemarle County, and Fluvanna County. And the facilities there, the utilities, for example, sewer and water lines and electricity, were paid for by the public at the public expense. And the roads were paid for by VDOT at public expense. So the industrial park there that Walmart's distribution center is locating in has been a classic example of a local subsidy for Walmart Center. And the Science Crossroads was a good example of an idea that was supposed to foster entrepreneurship and small business development. It was supposed to be an R&D style, research and development style business park, but it has transformed into a mega distribution center for Walmart.
Here's a good question. Workers have rights. They have the right to choose where they work. How can 1.2 million employees be so wrong?
The problem is that we have a lot of young people and other older people who are very poorly educated. And in our economy today, you have to have an education in order to make a decent living. It boils down to that. 20, 30 years ago, there are a lot of jobs. Well, the automobile workers, I think, is a good example. They didn't have to have more than high school education, if that, to work on the assembly line and probably make $35, $40 an hour. With all the benefits. Now, anybody with less than a high school education, they're lucky they can make minimum wages, make $8, $8.50, $9 in Walmart. They don't have a choice. They really don't have a choice. The only choice they have, and very few of them do this, I'm afraid, is get some education. So they can move up that ladder. And that's where we are. We have too many young people who are not educated enough to take advantage of the economy that we have. I think there was a quote here. There's a big demand for people who have some education. There is no problem in that area. The problem is in the lower education level. And that's what we have to do. That's why we keep talking about let's do something about education, because that is the way out for a lot of these young people. And if we don't, we're going to be stuck with this kind of economy.
One effect that the presence of a Walmart has on a local economy is that it competitively drives the local businesses that do manage to continue to keep their doors open. It exerts a lot of competitive pressure for them to competitively price their goods and services, and to do so by lowering wages or keeping their wages extremely low. And that has a tendency to eliminate more and more options for higher paying jobs in the local economy. So when we say that workers have a choice, very often, in smaller rural communities in particular, the choices become narrower and narrower and more limited, and higher-paying jobs tend to become lower-paying jobs throughout the local economy as a result of Walmart's wage policies. Okay.
I'll add something really quickly. Even though I'm supposed to be moderating. And that is that one of the things that happens with Walmart, particularly at distribution centers, is a sort of bait and switch where you're promised, a locality is promised, you're going to get, 400 jobs, and so many of them are going to be at $12 an hour, so many of them are going to be at $13 to $14 an hour, and so many are going to be at $15 an hour. And then the jobs actually come. The center actually opens. The number of jobs is more like 200 rather than 400, and they're in the $8.50 to $9.50 range rather than the promised $12 to $15 range. So I just wanted to toss that out. There's a couple of quick questions. Here's one that I think that I can answer really quickly. Is Walmart a publicly traded company? I believe that it is because I heard it mentioned on the local market watch today as I was walking out the door. And I see nods in the back from the Walmart watch crew. So they do have the excuse of protecting shareholder value, whoever it was who asked that question. Also, do the same problems we've been describing for Walmart, low wages, poor health care, and other benefits, driving out small local businesses, hold true for other mega box stores like Lowe's and Target?
Well, I don't know about Lowe's and Target. But Walmart's policies are often compared with those of Costco, which is certainly a competitor, particularly for Sam's Club, which is a Walmart subsidiary. And Costco pays their employees, what are the figures? Like 44% higher wages on the average, way higher than that. And they do so not at the expense of profits. The figures I've read, assuming they're reliable figures, are that Costco actually makes a higher profit per employee that they pay higher wages to than Walmart. And if I can find that in here, if you have this booklet, some of those numbers are in here. But they have been compared to some of the other competitors in the same market. And Costco has certainly got better policies, and it continues those policies without expense to the bottom line. All right, here's what it says. Costco pays its employees on average $16 per hour, 65% more than Walmart and 33% more than Sam's Club. This is on page 7 of your booklet. 82% of Costco's workers have health insurance compared to 48% for Walmart. In 2004, Business Week reported that Costco workers, with their higher wages and better benefits, helped the company earn $13,647 profit per hourly employee versus $11,039 at Sam's Club. Additionally, Costco benefits from lower turnover and higher productivity. So I think we have at least one example of a company that maintains even better profitability with better employee policies.
Walmart seems to be like President Bush. If you say the cap here is pink, even though it's blue, if you keep saying it's pink, you eventually will probably convince some people that it's pink. And with Walmart, they keep saying, we're wonderful, buy American, continue that. I mean, look in other parts of this book on page 8 and 9 when you come to find out that 70% of Walmart merchandise is from China, when they've been saying all along, buy American, buy American, buy American. There's been so many inconsistencies over the past couple months, too, where they do a media conference and say, we're going to publicly treat our, they say publicly, we're going to treat our workers better. Here's what we're going to do. And privately send out memos to all their managers telling them, oh, don't really follow what we're saying publicly. Do something else. The cap is pink. The cap is pink. The cap is pink.
I think one thing that we'd like to all know is, you know, for middle-class people, shopping at Walmart is a choice. And for me, as a city resident, it's not much of a choice since I'm not driving all that way for anything, especially on 29. But there are many people for whom the price points that goods are offered for at Walmart means that that's not really a choice. That's a necessity for them to shop there. So how do we, you know, what do we do? You know, we as good, you know, citizens who are thoughtful and who want to make a difference in the world, how do we sort of close that gap? How do we, you know, educate our neighbors who may not be aware? And, you know, how do we remain sensitive of those people who need to purchase, you know, goods at a place like Walmart because of pricing concerns?
Well, it goes back to what I was saying earlier about education and raising your income. And if you can raise your income, you can shop. You have a little bit more flexibility of where you'll shop. And why are stores like Whole Foods and Harris Teeter booming? Well, they're more rich people. And so we have to raise the income of our population. That is where you will combat that. As long as we have people who are not making a living, who are barely living, they have to shop in a place like Walmart. And you can't blame them. You just can't blame them because they have no alternative. It's either do without or buy cheap. And that's what they have to do. So what do we have to do? This is a long-term proposition, and that's unfortunately a lot of our answers have to be long-term. They have to evolve. And what I'm advocating is then we have to raise the income level of our lower income people. And then we have to figure out a way of doing it. Well, as long as we're putting all of our money in Iraq and a few other places like that, we're not putting in education, we're not doing anything for our people, well, we're not going to come out of it. We're always going to have the Walmarts dictating to us how our economy is going to go.
I think there are a couple other things that we could do in terms of state policies that would make a lot of difference. The minimum wage in the United States is $5.15 an hour. That's like beyond obscene. Well, we could make an effort in Virginia to say, well, we're not going to follow that. We're going to raise it up, and it's going to be higher, which means people would get more expendable income, which means maybe they would go to Martin Hardware or Meadowbrook Hardware instead of going to Walmart to buy some things. The second thing is to look at how we tax people on the bottom when it comes to the amount of income that they have. Today in Virginia, as we sit here tonight, people who are in the bottom 20% of income earners pay 10.5% of their income for local and state taxes. People in the top 20% of income earners in the state pay 8% of their income for local and state taxes. Now, we'll say that again. People on the bottom pay 10.5%. People at the top pay 8%. Now, it doesn't seem that that's very fair. Well, and if we just at least drew a straight line where people on the lower income were only paying 8%, then they'd have 2.5% of their income where they could have a little more discretion about where they shop because they have that money. The others, they're going to spend that money for necessities. They're not going to put it away. And I think that as we get into some public policy decisions, you know, the notion and what's kind of – there's a couple myths here. The myth of Charlottesville where everybody's doing just fine. And that's wrong. The myth of Virginia, where everybody's doing just fine, and that's wrong too. And the other one is, by golly, if they would just work a little harder. Well, people are working. And so if they're working and they finally come to realize, wow, if I'm a low-wage earner in Virginia, I live in the fourth harshest taxing state in the country when it comes to people on the bottom. And so they realize that's working against them. You know, we kind of think that you don't start paying income tax until you get above the poverty level, but that's not really true. You start paying taxes really early on as an income earner in Virginia. So I think a lot of these things tie in together, and if we change some of the tax policies, prop up wages, then people wouldn't have to go to Walmart. They could go to Martin Hardware or Meadowbrook Hardware. And then if we also look at where we're giving out money, I mean, there's lots of material now done by Good Jobs First and Greg LeRoy and others that say, well, where are we taking the state and federal dollars we have to try to create investment, create some community development? That tends to go to larger companies like Walmart to do that. And as we mentioned earlier, it might be more advantageous to do it on a smaller, homegrown level that would also help that situation you're addressing.
I think we ought to quit picking on Walmart. Walmart, right after the bill failed in Congress to raise the minimum wage, Walmart came out and said we ought to raise the minimum wage. So I think we're bashing Walmart wrongly. They're really trying to do the right thing. Of course, they're trying to change their whole image. They go on NPR now. I mean, good gosh. They're trying to cover all the bases now. They're good people. And they're changing their, I don't know whether they're changing their image, but they're changing their language. And whether the image is going to change, I hope not, because I think they're still doing the same things they always have done. But they're getting pretty slick about how they're doing. In fact, they have their own organization, I don't know what they call that office down there in Alabama or Arkansas, wherever they are. They've got a war room, and this war room is just for changing their image. It's winning the political battle, and they're looking at it as a political battle. They've got to change their image, and they're working at it with high-priced lobbyists and managers. They're coming after us to change their image.
Well, I definitely second what these two have said, that it's in the long term, it's a question of the working poor. And today we have millions of people who are working full-time and sometimes working more than one job. They live in households with more than one wage earner. And they still can't make ends meet. And so they go to Walmart for the prices, and it's one way that helps them make ends meet. But the issue really is an issue of wages. And until we establish as a nation that people should be paid in a way that values the work that they do in a fair way, that provides for a fair wage for a fair day's work, then we are not going, we're going to have Walmart's prices until we accomplish a different ethic in this country about wages. I completely agree about the minimum wage in Virginia and the Fair Wage Act and supporting that act and tax policies that unfairly penalize people of low income. But when we have an institution in the private sector that's as large and as influential and powerful as Walmart, dragging down wages throughout the country and then offering low prices to people who are earning too little, then what we have is a self-fulfilling and self-perpetuating system going on. It's a system that's creating its own victims and then selling products to them for a profit. And so I think you're absolutely right. You've hit the nail on the head. It's an issue of wages. It's not an issue of prices.
Well, I want to thank the audience for not asking softball questions. I think it's made for a much more interesting conversation. And I would like to close with a question that was asked in actually a rather aggressive way. Why are Mitch Vanieri's and Meredith Richards participating in the Walmart Watch campaign? But I think it's a question that all of us here on the panel could answer. And so I'm going to send it down and then I'll answer it myself, even though I'm supposed to be moderating. And I think we'll close with that.
Go for it. Okay. I feel about this campaign the way I felt about the Living Wage campaign when it emerged in our community. It's an issue that affects all of us, but it affects the health of the community at large. I represented for 8 years the city of Charlottesville, where we had 2,400 children annually who live in poverty. We have, in some of our elementary schools, 75% of our students who qualify for free and reduced price lunches, which, of course, is an indicator of poverty. And as long as we have people who work in the community and can only make ends meet by drawing on public assistance and public services, then we have a problem. And I believe that higher wages is one of the best ways, the best way by far, as long as, in addition to developing our economy in a way that provides higher wages and doesn't specialize in bringing in only companies that pay low wages, but that seeks to cultivate local businesses and encourage entrepreneurship and create jobs that pay a living wage, then I'm not working for the community that I was elected to work for. And so to me it goes hand in hand with the quality of life in our community and the welfare and well-being of the city and the county and the area that I love. And so to me it's a public policy issue, and even though it has to do with a private corporation in our midst.
I thought what I've been saying here probably indicates why I'm here. But I was a small businessman. I believed in helping my employees with fair wages, fair working conditions, good health insurance. In fact, passing off my business to my son, he kind of complains about our health care policies that we had. We paid all of the cost of their insurance policies for them and their families. And I felt it was a fair way to approach that. That's not saying everybody can do that. But I think a corporation in a capitalistic society, that's what we have, has a right to make a profit, but they also have a responsibility to be part of the community. And that is what I feel Walmart is not doing. They are not part of the community. And that indicates our society as a whole. I think, again, we have a lot of big businesses, again, who don't take part in the community. We've lost them. All small business, a lot of small business, are part of the community. They live and breathe, and they're responsible with the community. Big business doesn't do it. I'm not an advocate of big is better. I'm the reverse. Small is better. And I don't think that Darden School teaches up there that you got to make all the profit you can for your stockholders, and that's all. Unfortunately, that's what a lot of businesses do feel. Stockholders, the only ones that count. I also feel it's a disgrace that the five richest people in this country are Waltons. By far, the five richest. And here again my liberal philosophy comes out. Why can't they spread that out a little bit with their employees? They can't use all that money. They never will use all that money. Where's it going to go? Can't take it with them. So what's going to happen? I don't know. Nobody asked you that question, did they, Joe? Why are you here?
I'll tell them. I'll answer it too. I think that we have to remember we're in a right-to-work state. And if a worker at Walmart feels like they're not getting treated fairly, they don't really have a whole lot of options. You know, it's Walmart's pretty clear. It's either my way or the highway, and the highway doesn't seem to be very, very good. So I think it's incumbent on those of us who don't have that risk directly to speak up. And it's a pretty basic matter of justice to me. And so you think about, okay, now what can I do? I'm sitting here. This is unfair. And I think that we should tell Walmart that. And I think we're telling Walmart that by being here and saying we don't like these things. I would hope that Walmart, instead of doing one thing and trying to have a PR campaign that says they're doing something else, would just stop that, take all the money they're spending on the PR campaign, and a lot of wages would rise, and just be more honest with us. But I think we need to tell them the things that we don't like. I think we need to tell the local manager that. I think we need to tell the corporate headquarters that, and anybody else in between. The other is, I think that we have to start electing people at the local, state, and federal level who are tuned in, who are going to pay attention, who are going to say, I'm going to use my position to try to correct some of these problems. Again, it's hard. You have a right-to-work state. You have a tax system that's incredibly complicated. But there are lots of things that could change. The other is that there are proposals before the 2006 General Assembly that would make life very much different, not just for Walmart workers, but for low-wage workers, minimum wage, tax reform, health care, lots and lots of other things that we should be paying attention to and encouraging our state legislators to change. And the other is that I hope all of us will call our representative in Congress, Virgil Goode, tomorrow, and call Senator George Allen, and call Senator John Warner, and ask them to support a proposal that's been before Congress year after year after year, and that's a maximum wage, to say, let's set the limit. Because right now, it is so far up there, let's just say that, well, we'll set a maximum wage of $1 million, because surely everybody can enjoy a nice quality of life on $1 million, and get away from stockholders just making mountains and mountains of money and corporate executives making mountains and mountains of money, and we'll lift all boats.
Well, I don't think I could be any more eloquent than any of the people who have spoken before me, so I'll just say that I'm here supporting Walmart Watch because I believe in what they're doing, and I wanted to help. So thank you all for coming out. Your being here is going to help to spread the word and to do the thing that we all hope will happen. We're done. Thanks.